Welcome to the Fantasy Unicorns Podcast, a fantasy basketball podcast with a dynasty focus. Welcome all fantasy fiends to episode 4 of the Fantasy Unicorns Podcast. Be sure to check out our website, thefantasyunicorns.com. We have content like rankings, prospect rankings, and articles. And actually, speaking of articles, we have not one, but two new ones up on the site now for your viewing pleasure. Coming up in the podcast, we'll touch on each of those two new articles and get the writers of the articles themselves to shed some light on them. We actually have one of them with us today. We'll hopefully get that second one on another upcoming podcast here soon. We've also brought on a new contributor to the Unicorns team. Jeff will be our designated streamer slash waiver expert. I'm certainly looking forward to seeing his work this coming season because the streamer waiver pieces are always some of the most popular. But getting the ball rolling here, my name's Jay, and I'm joined as usual by my partner, Tony. What's going on, Tony?
Hey, Jay. I am doing well, enjoying another fine day in the Midwestern capital of Chicago.
Sounds good over there. Yeah. Is it windy? Is it hot?
Yeah.
How's the weather over there right now?
You know, it's starting to turn into fall. We're getting there slowly. And it's breaking my heart, if I'm being honest, because when winter comes, it is brutal. Yeah, but, you know, I actually learned a fun fact the other day. I learned that the Windy City is actually not a reference to the wind, but it's actually a reference to the politicians of Chicago, who apparently are famous for blowing wind.
Huh.
So I learned that on a historical tour of Chicago. I happen to be a history buff as well as a fantasy basketball addict. So there's your fun fact, listeners, for today. If you want to get an eye roll from anyone that you're talking to, feel free to pass along that shred of information.
Yeah, I did not know that. I'm not largely knowledgeable on politics, but somebody who does follow politics very closely is Kevin, who is actually joining us here today. He managed to sidestep his PTA meeting to be here with us tonight. What's going on, Kevin?
What's up, guys? It's awesome to be back on here. And my wife bit the bullet and she went solo to the PTA meeting. So I'm just kind of hoping that the kids don't come screaming down the stairs while we're recording. But we'll see. And just to piggyback a little bit off of what Tony was saying, you know, maybe this is pulling back the curtains a little bit. But earlier we thought that the podcast might just be me and Tony. So I thought I was going to be able to sneak in some political talk without Jay here, but no dice this time, so I'll have to see for one of the episodes.
Maybe I'll hop on the Taco Bell podcast. We'll do a special Liberty / Taco Bell
there you go
duo.
Seems like a good combination, and we also thank your wife for allowing you to stay back today. So anyway, it is the slow season still, but should be picking back up relatively soon, hopefully. But we do have a couple of somewhat newsworthy items to touch on here. First up is that Jason Tatum sprained his ankle in some FIBA play recently. It seems very minor at this point and should not affect his fantasy outlook. I'm just hoping that he doesn't overexert his other leg in workouts or anything like that. You know, I 100% expect that not to occur, but you know, he should be fine for the regular season, but it does make me a bit nervous for the remainder of his time in FIBA. You know, in dynasty leagues, especially the bigger 30 team leagues that we like to play in, we tend to do our drafts very early in the off season. Most of our drafts are actually already wrapped up here, besides one slow draft that we're currently participating in together here. So, you know, maybe there's some risk in drafting a player who is participating in international offseason play. Tony, do you let that sway your decision-making at all? Like if you were on the fence about, you know, making a decision between, I don't know, Donovan Mitchell and Devin Booker, for example, would you take the FIBA play into consideration when ultimately making your decision, or it just kind of fade on that completely?
I think it's case by case, in my opinion. For the specific example that you gave relative to Spida Mitchell, no. I for him, no. For, you know, maybe Harrison Barnes or, you know, some of the older guys on the roster who there aren't really very many. It's mostly a young roster. But, you know, potentially Harrison Barnes might have a little bit, especially if the Kings are making a deep push late in the year, which they very well could be this season. It's possible that Harrison Barnes might get a little bit tired toward the end of the year. It's something that, you know, is potentially something to keep an eye on. I don't know if I'm really letting it sway my decision-making too much, but it certainly is something to consider. I do remember that PJ Tucker was on the roster. I don't think he made the final cut, but PJ Tucker was on the roster, and I was thinking to myself, man, I'm going to stay away from Tucker because he, you know, is getting all this extra run in the summer, and he's, you know, really old. But he ended up, I don't think he ended up making the team, so it's not really a concern. But in the future, you know, when you're looking at international play, I think the stopgap is age. I think when you have someone who's older, that's when you start thinking through, well, how much load, how many miles are they putting on their body in the summer?
You know, that's a really good point that I kind of looked over here. The older guys, like you mentioned, you know, you got Marc Gasol playing for his international team in Spain, and you got a couple of other older guys. I know Harrison Barnes isn't exactly that old. I think he's 27, something like that. But your point still stands. You know, some of these older guys, Brook Lopez, I believe, is playing for the U.S. team. I don't think he's getting too many minutes, though, but a lot of the other international teams will be it'll be something to look out for. So
Gasol's a good point, a good call out. Rubio, another potential call out, because at the point guard position, he's not that old, but the point guard position, he's running around a lot. He's getting a lot of minutes. You know, that's a good point looking at the international guys for sure. And the run, potentially Batum as well, with France, he's playing a lot of minutes.
Kevin, do you let international play sway your decision-making at all when it comes to drafting?
Injury aside, I don't. You know, especially these younger guys, as Tony was alluding to, when these guys are, you know, under 25 years old, like, this is their prime as far as work capacity is concerned. Maybe not their prime as far as being complete ball players, but just the ability to exert energy and recover, all that stuff, is they're elite in that area. And so that doesn't really weigh in on my decisions for sort of the toll that international play puts on them. And some of the older guys, maybe a tiny bit, but not really. I view it all for the most part as being positive and just better, more experience, you know, being able to play under a coach like Popovich and being around some other guys. I view it as a positive, especially for the younger guys. And I don't worry much about sort of the miles that they put on while playing these games. And I've heard that Tatum could be back for the next game. So as far as injury concerns are there, I have none. And I don't actually have Tatum on any of my teams, but I wouldn't let this injury or his FIBA play get in the way of me drafting him if it made sense.
Yeah, I actually don't own any shares of him either. He always tended to get drafted a little before I considered him. But, you know, I don't normally consider it very much when it comes to changing my opinions on players when it comes to international play, but especially because it's a dynasty league, like we went over, you know, barring some kind of extreme repeat injury or anything like that, you're fine drafting most young players because they'll usually get back to where they were once expected to be. But we do have one more unfortunate piece of news to touch on here. Brooklyn Nets forward Rodions Kurucs has apparently been arrested on domestic violence charges for, I guess we don't have to go into too much detail here, but just to reading the report, for choking, slapping, and biting his girlfriend after threatening suicide. I mean, geez, man, this kind of felt like a shot in the dark to me. I was a Kurucs fan, and no, we don't have both sides of the story, but I can't imagine a scenario where it would excuse Kurucs from what happened here. But there are multiple potential negative outcomes, and I don't want to sell the situation short by bringing it back to fantasy basketball, but I guess that's why we're here, right? So, you know, he could face up to 1 year of jail time, but the report says since this seems like a first offense, that's unlikely. But by the NBA's rules, he could also be forced out on administrative leave, you know, no idea how long that would be, maybe until a psychologist deems him worthy to get back into the swing of things. Or from what I've read, he could also face immigration implications. He's not a citizen of the States, so he could even be subject to being forced away from America for a certain amount of time, you know, not just the NBA. Now, the Tatum news may not have impacted my outlook of him in drafts, but the Kurucs news might sway me a bit more. Do you guys have any particular thoughts on this situation? It's just it's kind of a rough one.
Yeah, you know, it's like you said, it is very complicated with these types of situations. Obviously, it's difficult from a human standpoint to hear things like this, not to mention, you know, the fantasy perspective. Personally, you know, I don't really know Rodion Skuric as a person. I have no idea, you know, who he is or what his personality is like. Obviously, if this is true, then, you know, I'm of the opinion that he should, you know, probably be banned from the NBA or, you know, suspended for multiple seasons. In either case, it's definitely something to keep a close eye on. I think he was someone who had quite a bit of fantasy value. I think he's a, you know, high upside young player who a lot of people were excited on, perhaps buried on the Nets depth chart with their recent acquisitions. But, you know, a potential high upside play. I think now, if from a fantasy standpoint, I'm thinking, you know, I definitely am keeping an eye on what's going on with from a news standpoint. But I'm also certainly concerned about, you know, if he's going to play this year, if he's going to play, if he's going to be suspended, if there's legal issues. Obviously, you know, we're talking about guys who make a lot of money. So it's possible that he might not face too much legal backlash, but that has nothing to do with whether or not the NBA chooses to penalize him, and also doesn't have any bearing, Jay, to your point about his visa or his status as a foreign national. So some of those things are things to consider. Obviously, from a fantasy standpoint, like you said, Jay, I mean, this isn't the fantasy element isn't the most important part of this, but that is our job. Right. And, you know, from a fantasy standpoint, I'm definitely taking him down a couple of, you know, not a cog. I mean, he might go as far as 30 spots, you know, a whole round for me potentially in a 30 team league. You know, it's a lot of, there are a lot of question marks right now with regard to his future. And I certainly wouldn't want to, you know, play a high risk situation with something like this.
Right. And in a win now team, it would just it would make me too nervous. Like you said, I dropped him down pretty significantly here. I'd probably just leave him to be someone else's issue. Now, if I'm rebuilding, you know, maybe I take a flyer on him. Maybe I even buy him if the price is low enough. If it's on a competitive team, I might try to snag him for with a buy low offer. What about you, Kevin? Do you have any thoughts on it? Do you have any? Are you dropping him down at all? In dynasty leagues or even redraft leagues, anything like that?
Yeah, he's definitely dropping down all of my rankings. Obviously we don't know everything, or, you know, like you had mentioned, we've only heard one side, but the details are very alarming. And if even a tenth of this is true, he definitely has some things that he has to work through, and whether or not that leads, like you said, to potential jail time or suspension. There's obviously things that are complicating the whole situation. And part of me also, I like to draft players that I want to root for. And I know, right, maybe that's kind of it can be counter sometimes to your actual success. But, you know, if there's a guy out there who's sort of a known, you know, abuser, whether or not he's, you know, quote unquote, you know, paid his dues or whatever after the fact, that's not a guy that I tend to want to get on my team. Now, it is fantasy, and, you know, if he fell to, we have him right now, I think in redraft, have him in like the 150, 160 zone, you know, so in really deep leagues, if he fell into, you know, the 200s, the late 200s, you know, obviously value wise, there's you can't really turn that down. But it's just not somebody that I would tend to go after at this point, unless we find out that, you know, something was very off about this woman's story. But it, you know, right now I'm just kind of taking her word on it, and we'll see what the investigation on behind all this unfolds. But yeah, he's just a guy that for now is kind of off, completely off my radar, which is too bad because he does have a lot of nice skill sets that I was looking forward to watching. He's only 21 years old, and you know, he does have some potential. The NBA is actually a really progressive organization, which I know they've focused on the mental health of players recently, which is a good thing. I know that I'm going way off subject here now, but the whole the ninja headbands thing is that one is not good, but they've taken a lot of good steps, I think, as a sports organization that a lot of other leagues like the NFL and the MLB have not really taken, as far as taking care of their players, looking after their welfare, protecting them. And so hopefully they have programs and stuff in place that can kind of help rehabilitate him in whatever way makes sense. You know, again, we need to hear the whole story, but I think moving forward, it's really going to, you know, it highlights a need for making sure that players are handling the rigors of the NBA, the pressures of the NBA, you know, and are taking good care of their own mental health, because that is a big aspect of behind not just playing basketball, but just obviously living their lives. And, you know, these are big investments, and they care for these players and want to see them succeed. And so I think it just makes sense that the league steps in with programs and really helps try to protect the players as much as they can.
Right. I think it's great that the NBA has all these programs now for as far as mental health, because I remember reading something one time that said you'd be so surprised that the percentage of NBA players that struggle with things like anxiety and depression and just different things. And it really got me thinking about the lifestyle that they're forced to live, you know, basically living on a plane and in locker rooms, going back and forth for you know, most of the year. It really puts things into perspective. But anyway, I think we can move on to something a little less serious and cringeworthy here. But first, we have a message from Anchor. We have two new articles up on the website. Kevin just published a piece entitled The Diary of a Startup Dynasty League. I'm looking forward to getting into that on here in just a moment, but I wanted to just briefly discuss the other newly published article first, and we can keep this relatively quick because I do hope to get the author of the article, Kyle, on here to discuss it in his own words soon. I mean, just getting into Kyle's article here, it's an easy, quick read. You know, I wish I could say that about my articles I write for the site, but you know, I do tend to go into information overload mode when I write. But anyway, I digress. The basis of the article is fantasy basketball trends to watch for, and he includes topics like Brooklyn's potential number two option behind Kyrie this season, Golden State's backcourt rotation, and possible breakouts in Charlotte. Kevin, is there any point Kyle made in his article that stood out to you for one reason or another? You know, any of the trends he pointed out that you're, you know, completely on board with, or conversely, any that don't quite jive with you?
Yeah, I enjoyed his take on Charlotte, sort of the lots of opportunity being up for grabs, which I agree, you know, on really bad teams, there tends to be a lot of opportunity for sort of players to come out of nowhere to all of a sudden have value, especially as the season goes on, when they just start rolling all sorts of crazy lineups out there. And then one that I didn't quite agree with was his take on Klay. And he mentioned Klay being drafted late in the third, which I had a little message to him about this, but he said that he had read that somewhere. But I know Yahoo right now, the ADP has him drafted in the late 10th round, because he's not supposed to be back at least until All-Star break, if not closer to March. And so to me, even when he comes back, they're going to ease him in, you know, assuming they're in a playoff position, they're not going to try to rush him back. So by the time your playoffs are rolling, you know, he could be playing, but he could be playing and only getting, you know, 20 minutes a game, which is, that's not worth holding that IR spot, or if you don't have an IR spot, having a dead roster spot on your team like that for the entire, you know, 5 months leading up to it. So for me, I definitely disagreed with that take. I think D'Angelo Russell is going to have a really good season. And I know he's being drafted also in about the third round, which I think of standard leagues. And that seems to make sense. But sort of the take on Clay, I think if it's a redraft league, I'm not touching him. Dynasty league, even drafting him in the 30s. I mean, he was the 30th ranked player last year. So I guess that's, to me, that's kind of his ceiling. I don't see him doing better than that. And I probably wouldn't be taking him at that spot. You know, just given his age and his potential for getting better, I don't really, you know, I think he's kind of, he is what he is. So, but definitely a redraft. I wouldn't, not touching him. And I haven't seen him being picked that early myself.
Yeah, the Clay in the third round was something that kind of raised my eyebrow too. I was wondering if it was kind of a typo because he called D'Angelo Russell a third round value right after that. But I don't know, you know, if it wasn't, I wonder if he was talking about maybe not per game value, but maybe overall value for Clay, which, you know, even when referring to overall value, that's a tough sell for me. Maybe 30 team leagues, he could be third round value, obviously. But, you know, us dynasty heads play a lot of 30 team leagues, but I wouldn't touch Clay anywhere near round three in redraft or dynasty leagues of 16 teams or smaller. I probably wouldn't draft him at all in redraft leagues, like you were saying. I think I agree with that. I'd let someone else take that gamble. And in dynasty leagues, he'd have to fall pretty far for me to even consider him at this point. Tony, you got anything that stood out to you in the article?
Yeah, I agree with Kevin that the piece on Charlotte, the portion on the Charlotte rotation and sort of opportunity there is a really good call out. I completely agree with Kevin's point that teams that are not good tend to produce guys who are very fantasy relevant because the stakes are lower and a lot of guys will get opportunities. Prime example of this is Kent Bazemore last year. He, you know, was not really someone who's on a lot of people's radar, but he was providing decent value to people and he wasn't all that expensive. And for a contending team, a guy like Kent Bazemore, he's a little bit older, but he's going to get minutes and opportunities. So, you know, that was the Hawks equivalent last season. This year, I think someone like that would be Cody Zeller. I like Cody Zeller. I think he does a few good things on the floor. The issue with a young team like Charlotte is that you won't have someone out there who's going to have the steady hand. Really, Cody Zeller is kind of the vet on that team right now. So I look to him to sort of be the standard kind of steady pace for the Hornets. And I could see him potentially overperforming his draft value currently. You know, he's a good player, he's decent, good field goal percentage, decent blocks, gets you rebounds, doesn't turn the ball over, can get you, you know, the occasional steal. He's a decent player, and potentially this year on a really bad Hornets team, you know, they're going to be missing a lot of shots. He'll have lots of opportunities to rebound. He's going to get a lot of minutes. If he can stay healthy, he's someone who I'm targeting on that Hornets team to potentially have a breakout year. Well, I don't know about breakout, but to have a year that's better than maybe what we expect from him.
Right.
And the other kind of question here is the question about, you know, what's the pecking order in Brooklyn this year after Kyrie? And that question, I think, is going to be really interesting. The obvious answers are your Caris LeVert's, your, you know, Spencer Dinwiddie's, your Joe Harris's. But, you know, the question comes down to, you know, Caris LeVert got that big extension. And so I think the answer is most likely going to be LeVert. And you're probably right about that. I think it makes the most sense. He's the most versatile scorer. He can score off the dribble. You know, but I really think that, you know, the person who's going to benefit the most from Kyrie is Joe Harris, right? Because Kyrie's gravity when he has the ball so many guys are going to be flying at him when he's, you know, dazzling with his handles. He's going to be moving past people. The defenses are going to collapse. Joe Harris is going to have a lot of opportunities, a lot of open shots. I think that Joe Harris potentially might be someone who could see an uptick this year in his threes, even more than last season. And if you happen to be in a league with three percentage, I'm in a league that where a category is three percentage. He's, you know, definitely someone you want to target because he gives you the threes and the three percentage. And that's, you know, his real benefit, his real sort of elite character quality. I think that is going to be optimized this season with Kyrie and the attention that he'll be getting.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I could certainly see Joe Harris stepping up a little bit and getting get a few more threes. I hope he does because I acquired him in a couple different leagues, actually. Getting back to Charlotte here, I liked your Cody Zeller pick as a guy I didn't really – he kind of just gets glossed over by most people, and including myself. I didn't really consider him too much. And another veteran that I could see stepping up a bit is Nicholas Batum as kind of, you know, the steady hand, the old vet on the team. Him and Marvin Williams, I wouldn't be surprised if one of those two kind of stood out this season. Batum's still only 30 years old. He just missed out on the top 100 last season. I think he was ranked 103. So I wouldn't be surprised if he... I'm not saying he's going to be a top 50 or even top 70 value, but I could see him easily kind of toppling what he did last year and cracking the top 100 again. And obviously, someone else from this Charlotte team that I kind of believe in is Miles Bridges. He'll be the most fun player on the team to watch, in my opinion, at least. But another player I wanted to briefly mention is Terry Rozier. You know, we talk about players who might have a negative stigma that comes with their name for one reason or another, and Scary Terry certainly fits that mold. Last year, he finished well outside the top 150 and off the standard league radar. Look, I know he has had his issues, and one stat that could somehow get even worse for him this season is his field goal percentage. He'll play a lot more minutes as the starting point guard for this Charlotte team, and he'll be asked to do a lot more for them than he has ever had the opportunity to in his career. Even the Celtics roster that you know, when Kyrie went down, had better options than this Charlotte team, in my opinion. I expect Rozier to crack the top 100 with the potential to climb even much higher than that, and maybe even into the top 60, which kind of makes my stomach turn just to say that. But, you know, he should have career highs in points, assists, and probably threes and steals as well, just from having a larger role in more court time. He'll be a great asset for punt field percentage builds for sure. All right, moving on to the other new article up on the site. The governor of the Fantasy Unicorns team, Kevin, has obviously been with us in this episode. He is the author of the new piece, Chicken Soup for the Dynasty Basketball Soul, otherwise known as Diary of a Startup Dynasty League. And for you fantasy basketball fiends that are considering getting into the more fun dynasty side of things and even pondering starting your own league, this is a fantastic article. You know, there are so many great points and tidbits you bring up here, Kevin. It was a joy to read, even for someone like me who has obviously played in dynasty leagues for years now. So, you know, without giving everything away, Kevin, why don't you tell us a bit about the article?
Sure. Yeah, no, I appreciate that, Jay. When I started writing this, I did toy with the idea of really getting corny and actually making it like a diary with entries, Dear Diary, but you know, my judgment kind of steered me away from that. But anyway.
Dear fantasy basketball gods, maybe.
Exactly. Right? Yeah, you know, 30-team dynasty leagues and just dynasty leagues in general and fantasy basketball in general, I think, have been getting more and more popular every year. You know, we're still obviously behind fantasy football as far as popularity, but I've noticed a spike in basketball the last few years, and especially with sort of these deeper dynasty leagues. I know Jay and Tony are already in a bunch of them. I'm in a bunch as well. And they're just so much fun. And so I wanted to kind of talk about if you wanted to start one of these leagues. And I mentioned in the article, if you've never been in a 30-team dynasty league, you probably shouldn't be the one to start. Probably join some existing leagues already and understand how they work a little bit, figure out what you actually like and don't like about those leagues before you sort of venture into this starting a league and becoming a commissioner and all that. But if you have had that experience or something like that experience and you want to jump in, I wanted to put together sort of a nice jumping off point for sort of understanding the different considerations that you need to have when you're starting up a league. And obviously every league is different. Every commissioner is different. Every setup is different. And so there's a lot of customization that you can include in your leagues. And so I just went over some of the basic things that you need to think about as far as making a choice one way or the other when you're starting up a league, because I think what happens with some people when they try to start up leagues is they're like, oh yeah, I'll start it up. And they kind of get overwhelmed or they don't even know where to start. And so that was the sort of the idea behind this league. And so, you know, one of the things I mentioned is, you know, you want to come up with a league charter. You want to have those league rules in a document that you can share with everybody. You know, it works great on Google Docs or whatever. You can email it to everybody. I like Google Docs because you can make edits and people can always access it, sort of the most recent version. But you want to have set rules in there. So once you decide how you want the league to run and the setup and everything, the, you know, the payouts and all that stuff, it's somewhere written. So everyone that has joined understands the rules, has agreed to them essentially. And there's no sort of arguing back and forth. Now, I say that also to say it's important to be flexible as well. And I tried to be flexible with this league as far as, you know, if the real sort of energy of the league is pushing in a direction that's different from what you originally intended, if it's not something that you really had your heart set out to have, you just kind of made a choice, but it's sort of isn't fitting with sort of the culture of the league, be flexible and be okay with changing gears a little bit. You know, with that also, I mentioned having a league board. And so the league that we've started with the Fantasy Unicorns, both Jay and Tony are in our league board. So the league board essentially is there to help make decisions and sort of act as a group that kind of can push trades through and sort of be experts of how the league is supposed to be run. So not everything falls on the commissioner as far as sort of being available, but also making decisions. And the other thing I just wanted to touch on is understanding the level of competition. You know, there are lots of dynasty leagues out there, and you want to find one that fits you. You know, you don't want to necessarily jump into an expert's dynasty league if you've never played dynasty before. You can try it.
Solid advice.
You can always try it. You're probably going to get smashed. Go and find, you know, some more startup leagues with people that aren't as experienced. Maybe find some buddies, find some people on Reddit, that sort of stuff that want to try it. Now, if you are an experienced GM, you don't want to necessarily mess around with sort of the rookie dynasty leagues. I don't have a better term for it, but just guys that are sort of out of their depth in a 30-team league. You want to be playing with the best of the best. And that really goes a long way towards the enjoyment of the league, because how much fun is it to just beat up on a bunch of guys that don't know what they're doing? You know, yeah, okay, maybe you'll win some money, whatever. But
I was about to say, it depends on how much money you're winning, I guess.
yeah, sure. But I mean, you know, I think most people here, the winning is sort of the icing on top of everything as far as the money is concerned. It's more about sort of the pride of putting together a team and just being in a fun league that is active and is competitive. To me, that's always what I'm shooting for. And if I happen to win any money, that's great. But it's not sort of my main goal when I'm in a dynasty league. But everyone's different too. So, you know, if you're just there to make money and you just enjoy beating up on rookies, then, you know, that's the type of league you want to go for. But I think for sort of the more experienced guys, you want to be in leagues where you're testing yourself against people that know what they're doing. And, you know, are legit leagues. And so those are the types of things you need to think about. And I kind of go more in depth on that in this article. I know I'm talking a lot right now, but, you know, definitely want to check out the article and, you know, get an understanding of some of the things you need to think about when you're starting up a league.
You know, one dynasty rule I'll touch on real quick is a rule that I kind of changed course on over the years. It's in regards to the waiver wire. Now, I'm actually not in a fantasy basketball league with these rules anymore, but I am in one fantasy football league with this rule, and the rule is simple. Basically, there are no waivers. There's no fab bids. There are no bids or claims. It's a free-for-all, first-come, first-serve type of waiver method. And I said I changed courses on it because I used to be all for it because this was before I had kids, before I had a job that forces me to work OT sometimes, before I just had things to do in general. I loved this method of waiver additions. I stayed on top of every move and everything that happened. And if a player became a hot pickup for whatever reason, I was the first on the scene. Now, I realize that that's completely unfair to everyone now, especially in bigger dynasty leagues where some of your league mates might live in other countries like we have in our leagues now. And if you use this method, I can tell you from experience, some people will love it, but others will despise it. And there will be some drama, at least early on. So I would just try to avoid it. And one more reason that I've grown to appreciate fab bids, which is the best method in my opinion, instead of the free-for-all method, is because having waivers has saved me from myself numerous times. If a young player has one good game, I tend to have a trigger-happy finger and like to take a shot on that player, oftentimes at the expense of a more established player. Multiple times it happened that I got outbid on a player who blew up in one game and then ended up laying an egg for most of the rest of the season. So I was thankful for the fab method in those particular situations. Tony, do you have any particular rule you don't care for, or vice versa, any method you feel is better than others? Or
well, first I want to say I agree with you about not having just wide open waivers. It's just too much pressure. I think it's less fun. It's better to have to let everybody have a shot at someone, and if you're willing to pay a ton in free agent budget, then great, then you have to live with that. You live with that choice. So I like that rule. One thing that I wanted to call out that I particularly enjoyed about this recent draft that we did was the franchise draft to start. So yes, that to definitely. Me was, to me that's a really great way to start the to kick off the franchise, to kick off the dynasty league, because it's an added level of strategy. It allows people to sort of build teams in a different way. And I think that there are a lot of inherent issues, especially in a 30-team league, with the snake draft process. It loads, if you're picking, towards the end of the first round in a 30-team league in a snake draft, you're at a kind of a severe disadvantage. Because you don't have access, you sort of miss out on your ability to get three players in sort of the top 100. You're kind of limited. Well, that you have to draft really, really well to make sure that you have three guys in the top 100, as opposed to sort of getting a better shot at top guys. So I've found that, that strategy is really effective, just for making sure that there's parity, making sure that everybody kind of has equal access to good players, and then also kind of adding in a layer of strategy that I think is really interesting. So those listeners who don't really understand what I'm talking about, what I mean is you have an initial franchise draft where you pick one player. Every manager picks one player from each team. You can only pick one player from one team. And once a player is picked from one team, you can no longer pick any players from that team. And you assume the name, the title of the team that you pick. So in our Fantasy Unicorns League, I'm the Kings because I drafted De'Aaron Fox. When I drafted Fox, nobody else could draft Bagley or Heald or anyone else. So that's I think it's a really inventive and interesting way to start. And I also think it's a really good way to maintain parity.
It is. I absolutely love that method. Those drafts have been such a blast. Just watching some of the names fly off the board towards the end of the round, like you would never see a Kevin Love or a Miles Bridges go in the first round of drafts if it wasn't this style of draft, But Anyway, I definitely recommend checking out both of the new articles on our site. Both have very valuable information and are just great reads. Okay, I think we can move on to our final topic if no one has anything else to add here.
For the last segment of our podcast here, I figured that it made sense for us to maybe get back down to the roots, to the basics of fantasy basketball. Some of our listeners potentially might be saying, you know, geez, this is the first time that I'm playing fantasy basketball. And I've been online and I've looked at the articles and, God, I keep seeing people talking about punting. And I thought this was basketball. I don't remember punting being a part of the game. I thought that was football. I'm really confused. If that's you, then boy, are you lucky that you picked this podcast to listen to, because we're going to start out with just a little bit of a breakdown of sort of the most basic strategy in fantasy basketball, at least in head-to-head nine-cat standard fantasy basketball. The strategy of punting is focused on selecting players and clustering players who are good at a very specific set of statistics. So in a standard fantasy basketball league head-to-head nine category, what that means is you're being evaluated, your team week to week is evaluated across nine categories. Those standard categories are points, rebounds, assists, steals, blocks, field goal percentage, free throw percentage, turnovers, and
Three pointers.
Yes, thank you, Kevin, for the assist. You'd get 1 point for that. Anyway, point is, in a punting strategy, what you would do is, if in my first three picks, say that my first pick is Russell Westbrook. Not that your first pick would necessarily be Russell Westbrook this year, but let's say it is Russell Westbrook. You made a mistake, whatever, auto draft, something happened, you happen to pick Russell Westbrook. What that means is you're likely not going to crush either field goal percentage or free throw percentage. Chances are it's going to be very difficult for you to build a team that's going to be very good in those categories. So if I've drafted Russell Westbrook, the strategy for me is to now focus on building players, on drafting players who are not strong in those categories, in field goal percentage and free throw percentage. So I'd be looking at, we mentioned Terry Rozier earlier. He's going to have really bad field goal percentage. That's an option. LeBron James shoots really bad free throw percentage. He's an option. Ben Simmons is a bad free throw shooter. Lonzo Ball.
Several big men, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Multiple big men. Your DeAndre Jordans, your Thomas Bryant, those guys, not great. Well, Thomas Bryant actually doesn't shoot a horrible free throw percentage, but you know, those are examples of guys who, you know, would match well. If you're in a situation where you have, you know, you've drafted a lot of big guys, it might make a lot of sense to punt assists or to punt three pointers. In those situations, essentially what you're doing is you're stacking your roster in such a way so that you'll dominate in certain categories and you will strategically not do well in other categories so that you can dominate in those other categories. It's generally suggested that you don't punt more than two categories. One obviously is good, two is great. Three categories, I've seen some people risk a three category punt.
It's
extremely risky, it can pay off. But it is extremely risky, and if you're not in a deep league, it becomes really difficult to plan your punt strategy in the later rounds. So, you know, you sort of handcuff yourself with going too deep on the punt. But generally speaking, it's a really good strategy. It, if you're in a league where, you know, you suspect maybe people aren't punting, it could make or break your season, and it could bring home a trophy for you. So if you're in a standard league, I would definitely suggest punting is a great way to maximize your potential. Guys, do you have any additional thoughts around punting? Any other basic fantasy basketball chops that you'd like to share with our listeners?
I do have a slightly different take on punting. You had mentioned sort of strategically doing poorly in a category as a punt. But I tend to view it more as just not even caring about that category. So as if the category just does not exist. And not necessarily finding players that are bad in that category. Obviously, you're going to have some players that are bad in it if you're punting to start. But not really. I guess what I end up hearing a lot about people seeking players because they fit that punt, because they happen to be bad in a category that you say you're punting. And I don't think that's necessarily the right way to go about it. I think you just view it as I'm punting free throws, then just basically cross that off the board and sort of readjust your rankings based off of that, and not necessarily seek out the guys that are bad at free throws to match that punt. So that's just, maybe it's a semantic thing, I don't know, but that's just sort of how I view it, instead of intentionally looking for players that are bad in that specific category. The other thing I wanted to add is I always punt turnovers. I don't care about turnovers. I feel like I understand why it's there. I know some people like to get rid of the turnover category and replace it with something else. It does help balance things a little bit, because otherwise, you end up with big men sort of getting devalued quite a bit if you, say, put in three-point percentage or something like that instead of turnovers. But overall, it's just a category, because you have the guys that have the high usage that you're going after, the guys that have the ball in their hands a lot. Those are the guys that are going to get turnovers, and sort of it's this inverse relationship where if you have those guys, you're obviously going to be sort of getting rid of turnovers or not caring about turnovers. And so that's a category I kind of always automatically punt. So that was just my take on that. And I don't know if you guys had any other takes on it.
Yeah. I wanted to just jump in and agree with your perspective on punting. I think it's a really good point, because you're right. You run the risk when you focus on what players don't do as opposed to what they do. And anybody who giggled when I said that, you're a child. I think it's an important point, because it essentially what you're saying is you run the risk of overvaluing players for a deficiency, right? And that's, I think, being mindful of that and being mindful of those value levers is an important point to make. So I just wanted to voice my agreement.
One thing I wanted to get into here, I mean, we are predominantly dynasty focused, is how punting might differ in a dynasty league as opposed to a redraft league. You know, in redraft leagues, it's simple to run with a punt build if that's how, you know, the draft goes for you. I've done it multiple times, but in a dynasty league, you're in it for the long haul, and it becomes more difficult to want to put yourself in a very particular build like that. And like y'all mentioned, when you're punting, you don't want to purposely look for the players who are awful in a particular stat. You just want to kind of ignore that stat. If you're punting field goal percentage, you don't have to draft Terry Rozier or Trey Young. All you're doing is ignoring that category completely. And what that does is bump certain players up in the rankings, because they become more valuable when you ignore the category that they're bad in. I believe last week we mentioned how Steven Adams finished as the 80th overall fantasy player last season. But if you're punting free throw percentage, he takes a huge leap into the top 25, which is why I actually took him in my punt free throw percentage build in our Draftmaster Dynasty League draft that we're in the midst of right now. But when you're punting in a Dynasty League, you just have to ask yourself if you're okay with being locked into that build. Obviously, it's possible to make a bunch of trades and flip the script on your build, but it's more difficult than it sounds to find that many trades where both sides come out happy, I guess. And that's where not purposely trying to lose a category, just kind of ignoring it, comes into play. Because if you intentionally draft a whole roster of players who are weak in, you know, field goal percentage, it becomes exponentially more difficult to wiggle out of that build one step at a time, unless you kind of hit the reset button and trade all those players in an effort to start tanking. But it's not impossible. In addition to that punt free throw percentage build I'm running with, I also built a punt assists build in a 30-team startup dynasty last offseason. And then I actually changed course midway through the season myself. And assists might be one of those top-heavy stats where if you just kind of acquire one or two of the better playmakers in the league, it's a bit easier to start finding success in that category. You know, guys like Jeff Teague and Ricky Rubio, and maybe even Elfrid Payton to a lesser extent this year because he'll be behind Dennis Smith Jr. maybe. You know, those guys are relatively easy to acquire and contribute big numbers to that particular category. But now that I rambled on about a couple of my Dynasty League punt builds, have you guys ever punted a category yourselves? Kevin, have you ever punted anything in a Dynasty League?
I tend not to. You mentioned before, redraft leagues tend to kind of remain as they are for the most part as far as core players of teams. But Dynasty is a whole different beast where there's a lot of movement potentially in good leagues where it's a lot of trades, a lot of moves happening. And so I just am going for the best value. I try to find more or less well-rounded players. You know, there's a couple players where in a Dynasty draft, if one is starting up now, that I would consider punting. So like if you draft a Giannis in the first round, or if you draft like a Zion, you know, those are two guys that I think kind of lead down that punt free throw. There's a couple of guys that are punt field goal, but for the most part, because there's a lot of fluidity and flexibility in Dynasty leagues, a lot of trades, I don't want to necessarily go down the route of kind of cornering myself with a punt. And I'm just kind of looking for sort of the best possible player or the best sort of value for a player. And, you know, I know that with enough moves and things, I can kind of make something fit the way I want it to, and not sort of align myself to a specific punt.
Yeah, that makes sense. I don't normally like to punt Dynasty leagues either, but you know, if the draft falls in a particular kind of way and I start off with three guys who would fit perfectly in a punt blocks build, and you know, I might be swayed to do that. What about you, Tony? You ever punted in a Dynasty league before?
I think it depends on what your strategy is. I think that if you're rebuilding, you can ignore punting entirely, because it just doesn't matter. However, I do think
you're punting wins when you're rebuilding.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I do think that it becomes a little more potentially important when you're pushing into contention and you're trying to find, you know, those little pieces that might give you an edge. You know, from week to week, I am utilizing a punt strategy for one league that I'm in. I think it's actually a league that I'm in with Kevin, potentially both of you, the Reddit Invitational League.
Yeah, we're both in that.
Yeah, it's not necessarily a very intense punt, but technically I should lose steals pretty much every week in that league. My team has, just so for reference, so you guys have a sense of what that team is. That team has Karl-Anthony Towns, Mike Conley, JJ Redick, LaMarcus Aldridge, Bielitsa, Barnes. It's a contending team. It's a team that should do pretty well in that league. Obviously, steals are a difficult stat to come by, and it's definitely something that you should focus on if you're trying to win that category. If that's something that, you know, it's very possible that, you know, you could lose steals most weeks if that's not something that you focus on. But again, to Kevin's point earlier, it's not so much that I was looking for guys who don't get steals as much as I wasn't prioritizing steals when I was building my draft strategy. And after I drafted four or five guys, this was this was in a dispersal. And it was six teams in the dispersal or seven teams in dispersal. So, you know, it becomes a bit easier in that sense because there's a smaller pool. So you're kind of tied a little bit more in terms of the decisions that you make.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I just kind of went for, you know, guys who would cover my other things. And if they don't get steals, I just didn't care about it. And ultimately, I built a pretty solid team. You know, it's all right. I mean, my, you know, again, like I said, it's Towns, Aldridge, Conley, Redick, Barnes, Jordan, DeAndre Jordan, Bielitsa, it's a solid team. Goran Dragic, who hopefully has a good year this year. And that, you know, and so ultimately, you know, does the punt necessarily really, is it really going to play a huge role? Maybe, maybe not. That remains to be seen. It wasn't really a huge part of my strategy, but it was part of it. And I, you know, we'll see if it plays out.
Okay, so I mean, we could start winding it down here. I do have one last thought. I wrote an article last season on the best out of position punt build players, and I think that's a very important aspect to have knowledge on. It can mean the difference between, you know, victory and defeat for rosters like this, because if you're punting assists, it can be difficult to find value out of the point guard position. Or if you're punting blocks, you might not be able to find nearly as many centers who can contribute value to your team. So it's very important to know these off-position values. It was a great article. I enjoyed writing it a lot, and I'll probably write something similar to it this coming season. But to give a couple of quick examples, DeJounte Murray and Derek White are great out-of-position punt assist foundations, and both have point guard eligibility. There are not many point guards who see a bump in value when punting assists. These guys do because of the other stats they contribute so well in. You know, their value isn't heavily reliant on assists like most point guards. And on the other end of the positional spectrum, if you get Nikola Jokic in the first round of your draft, he's a really good start to a punt blocks build because he's a center who contributes so much in out-of-position categories like assists and some threes. You know, same goes for Blake Griffin. And then you have Kevin Love and Domantas Sabonis, who are center eligible but don't rely on blocks to provide value because of some of the other stats they throw out there. But so I think that's very important to keep in mind and have knowledge on, you know, which players provide which stats and which players are not so strong in certain stats. But I guess we can start closing up shop here. Y'all remember to visit us at thefantasyunicorns.com as the season draws closer. Hopefully our redraft rankings will be up soon, and we're working our dynasty rankings right now as well. So where can they find you on social media, Tony?
You can find me on Twitter at @whose_your_papa.
All right. And be sure to catch me on Twitter at @fantasynbalayup. And Kevin, where can they find you?
You guys can find me on Twitter at Kevin So. And actually, our rankings are up. So go ahead and check those out. I know Tony's still wrapping his up, but you can check out my rankings as well as Jay's and I believe Kyle's as well.
Four weeks now. It's been weeks, so I promise that I'm working on it. It's just, you know, it just takes a really long time.
It does, one step at a time, man. Yeah. And then we have.
I'm terrified of someone criticizing me. You know, just terrified.
Just use the consensus rankings, man.
That'll be the next episode. We'll just tear each other's rankings apart.
Oh yeah, please.
All right. I think it's time to get out of here. That'll be it for us. Until next time, Fantasy Fiends. We'll catch y'all later. Mm-hmm.